Arctic Enema, which you climb up a small platform, probably 10 feet up, and then you slide down into a giant pit of water that has a trailer full of ice right next to it that they're constantly dumping ice into. There's a lot of grip strengthy ones. There's a cargo net platform, or you climb up, you grab onto a cargo net, and you have to traverse all the way across lots of tight tubes. You know, I think collectively there's 25 obstacles, and you have to go through them all for one loop, and then you get to do it again and again and again and again.
Hey, welcome back to the Ultramarathon Mindset Podcast, where we talk about what it takes to go the distance in running and in life. I'm your host, Eric Dieter. I'm an ultramarathon runner and a mindset coach. When trail runners get together to run a few miles, we never know where the conversation is going to go. So if you're ready, let's get started. My guest this week is Devin Nelson. Devin is a returning guest. He was on episode 80 just about a year ago when he had competed in the world's toughest mudder. He is back again. He finished the world's toughest mudder again this year. He made his goal. And we talk about training and ultramarathon running and his group, the Buckleheads in Topeka, Kansas. A shout out to them. I know a lot of the Buckleheads are listeners to this show. So here is my conversation with Devin Nelson. But yeah, I appreciate having you back on. It's fun. Last time, give people a little bit of a recap of who you are and how you got started to with what you're doing and where you're at now.
All right. Well, yeah, I guess to recap a little bit. My name is Devin. You can probably see in the show notes. I live here in Topeka, Kansas, originally from the Manhattan area. If you're probably listening to this a little bit later, but the Cats are unfortunately losing pretty good to Alabama right now.
Oh, really? Okay. This is their bowl game, right?
Yeah, it's the Sugar Bowl, and it was 42-14 when it was close in the first half, but a couple of turnovers, just Alabama's laid down the throttle now. And
oh my goodness. Yeah, well,
yeah.
They've had a pretty, Manhattan's had a pretty good, KU or K-State has had a pretty good football team this year.
Yeah. But you know, I've been running the ultra marathon distances for probably about 3 years now. And before that, it was just kind of shorter obstacle course races and tough mudders. I got into the tough mudder kind of scene in 2013. And then just started doing those and then started realizing that anybody could, as long as you train for it, anyone could do the bigger stuff where you see the professionals do it. And then one thing led to another. And this last year I got 75 miles at World's Toughest Mudder. I got fifth in my age group, which was, I think I got fifth, but yeah, it was something.
75 miles and you ran for it's a timed event, right?
Yeah. World's Toughest Mudder. It starts at noon on Saturday and ends at noon on Sunday. Technically it ends at 1:30, but you have to start your last lap at noon in order to, you know, if you start the last lap, you can finish. You have to be finished by 1:30. But it's that particular one is a 5 mile course, and you just run it as many times as you can. And my goal was 75 miles, and with the help of a lot of Kansas City friends and my wife and everyone, I got that. So, which last year when I ran it, I fell short of that. I got 65 when it was in Vegas. And this year, arguably harder, colder, you know, kind of just more mud, all that stuff. So, yeah.
Well, that's pretty impressive. And that's one of the reasons why I wanted to have you back on the show is because, last time we talked, you were telling about the tough mudder and mm-hmm. you'd fallen short of your goal. And this year, you overcame all of that and did so much better.
Yeah. Yeah. It was very interesting because, like, reflecting on 2021 to 2022. 2021 was, there's so many life things happening. Like I got a promotion at work, and then we sold our house, and then bought a new house in this crazy, it still is kind of a madness market. It's settling a little bit, but the housing market was insane. And then just with a newborn, and then trying to do these ultra marathons and all the travel, I put too much on my plate. And so comparing 2021 to 2022, now, you know, our baby, or he's not a baby anymore. He's almost walking. His name is Jacoby. He just turned one. But yeah, just settling things down. I took a step down from work. And so just kind of went back to being a driver, and then just relieving stressors and kind of focusing on my family and just also personal endeavors. You know, in 2021, I DNF Silver Heels. 2022, I went back there and got it done. And then same thing with World's Toughest Mudder. You know, I didn't reach the goal. And then 2022, reaching the goal. Mm-hmm. So it was just, it's either persistence or just being stubborn. But yeah, that's kind of comparing the years here, because yeah, recording this on New Year's Eve, lots of reflection and
you know, back. And I had forgotten that you had run Silver Heels.
Yep. That was the only 100-miler I did this year. Like the focus was that, because DNFing something like that in 2021 just sat with me for the entire year. So the focus was to get that done and then to see what else happens.
Now, yeah. When you DNF'd, you were with Jonathan.
I was with Jonathan.
Yeah.
I love that podcast you guys did with him.
He, well, and his story about Leadville. I mean, that was great.
It was an honor being there. Like I paced him for those final 26 miles from Outward Bound on, and just seeing that course, my name's in the lottery for this year. Like, I want to go run that. Yeah.
So how is the course different from Silver Heels? I know they're both mountains.
Yeah, they're both mountains. I mean, Leadville is just one big out and back pretty much.
Okay.
And a lot of the elevation gain in Leadville it's in Hope Pass, the power line climb. And there's a couple little mini climbs, but most of that course is runnable. Comparing that to Silver Heels, lots of fire road, also lots of single track that they actually dug out themselves. And like the race director there, they handmade a lot of those trails out there, but it is technically 50 miles out, 50 miles back, but there's a lot of mini out and backs in there too. But I think Silver Heels is harder, just seeing most of Leadville and just kind of talking to people that have done both. What makes Leadville hard is that 30-hour cutoff. Mm-hmm. That's what makes that's because overall, like if you give someone 36, 38 hours to finish Leadville, most people could probably do it if they train for it. Mm-hmm. But getting that done in 30 hours, that's hard.
Yeah. I look, well, I look at almost any 100-miler, you know, with 30 hours, and like,
that's hard.
It's hard. It's yeah. I mean, you've got to, you really have to be moving. And,
It took me 36 hours to finish Silver Heels.
Yeah. What was the cutoff for? What's the cutoff for Silver Heels?
He increased it to 38. Okay. I think mainly because he was also running the race himself. Like that's like, I don't know much about race directing, but when the race director gets to finally run his own race, cause I didn't realize that most race directors, they can't run their own race because they're putting it on. Like nothing happens. And, you know, to see him run it and to see him struggle, because he had run, like he's run 50, 100 milers or whatever, like obscene number it is, but he hasn't ran a 100 miler in I think 5 years or something like that. And it was just cool being alongside him and just kind of the stuff that he does.
Yeah. So was he directing it this year as well? Or
his wife was.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. His wife was directing the Human Potential Running Series is the race company. John, he's kind of a controversial guy over there in Colorado, but he puts on good, tough, challenging races, and that's kind of what he's known for.
So what is he controversial for? Because I'm not familiar with
him. I think a lot of his stances. He's also from, I think he's from New England, So he's very blunt with a lot of things. And sometimes that comes across as not being so nice sometimes. And he's very out of the way with making sure that he's not there holding your hand through the race. Cause when you're in remote Colorado, you know, in the mountains, you need to have your stuff together, and you need to be self-sufficient because help is nowhere near you.
Right.
And there's actually, he went on a really long rant about, he called it runner A, but it was basically a guy, he had never run 100 miler before. He showed up at that start line and was just like, here are my keys. Can you hold them for me when I get back? He was ripping the tags off of his pack. Like, this is not even an exaggeration. He had never worn his Hokas. I think they were Hokas that he had. And I don't know, just as unprepared as a runner as you can be, but he miraculously finished.
Oh my goodness. Yeah. You're leading up to the story and I'm like, okay, yeah, I'm sure
he finished, God. Even though he claims to have gone off course, for a little bit, but Ed and I, we passed him on the final, like 5 mile stretch, and he was so out of it, but
was exactly this year that this happened.
Yeah. This was this last year, but kind of the moral and kind of the lesson taking away from it is that they had to hold his hand the entire time to make sure that he knew where he was going. He had everything he needed. Like, they almost acted like his own, like, personal crew. Mm-hmm. But that's not something a race director should be responsible for. They should, you know, they have other things to worry about too, but I don't know, just as a runner, you need to be prepared. You need mm-hmm. to know the course. You need to, like, especially in remote Colorado, but
yes.
Yeah.
Well, when I was volunteering at the Hawk this year, there was a guy mm-hmm. and I was at the Land's End aid station, and he was mm-hmm. He was maybe 20 some years old, and I don't remember if he even was carrying water. I don't think so. And he was cramping pretty badly, and never run more than 20 miles, I think, and you know, just you know, really, again, like the guy you described. Mm-hmm. And we talked to him about salt, you know, taking salt. He's like, well, why would I do that? And I was like, well, yeah, you're cramping, and that's, you know, salt will help, you know. So he really didn't have any clue.
Sometimes that is like going into, I always call it no man's land, when are going into the distance that you've never ran before and you have no idea how your body is going to react. Sometimes that is just, you just have to learn that mm-hmm. way. But I guess what I was saying more so, like, the Hawk is a little bit different than, you know, Silver Hills in Colorado.
It's a lot different than Silver Hills,
but you should still be as prepared as you can and know the course. But at the same time, you, like, there's something, I guess, magical about not knowing what to expect, like, well, to a point.
Yeah. To know. A point. Yeah. Yeah. But I don't think, because he was signed up for the 100, and I think he made one more loop,
shout out to
difficult this year.
Yeah. Shout out to my friend. I paced my friend Hunter for the fourth loop. I went out there, probably as you left, I went out to Land's End and just kind of met up with him when he was, I think, on loop 3.
But, okay. Yeah.
But yeah, the Hawk was kind of cold, wasn't it?
It was cold. Like, it was cold and rainy. It rained again. So the you know, course was, that's hard to run in the rain, but, mm-hmm. yeah, I was at Land's End, had the morning shift, and then went back again for the evening time, just to hang out and help. I mean, just, mm-hmm. I wasn't assigned, and, they had some people who didn't make it for the West End. And so I went out there for the overnight. I slept for a little bit in my car and then did, like, from, you know, 1 a.m. till 6 in the morning out at West End.
Okay. Yeah. We must have came up when you're sleeping on your car or something. Yeah. he finished in 23 hours. Oh, wow.
That's pretty good.
Yeah. That was his goal. Cause I knew that he could finish it without me, but his goal was 23 hours and his watch died. And, he Hunter's a beast. I think he got third or fourth place, but he's doing the flyover series. Did you hear what,
no,
do you know what that is?
No, I'm not familiar with that.
It's cool. The race director of the Hawk, Amy, I think she helped put it together, but it's all these Midwest 100 milers. It starts with the Hawk and then it goes to the, Hitchcock Experience.
Oh, wow.
Okay. I think that was the most recent one. That one's in Iowa. What is that third? There's a third one in Iowa.
Mines of Spain.
Mines of Spain. Yes, Mines of Spain. And then it ends with The Outlaw down in Oklahoma.
Oh, wow.
So it's just a cool, I think they get a special buckle for completing all four. And I think there's six or seven runners that have done it.
Okay.
The Hitchcock just ended. And then, so they get, I think it was 400 milers in a span of 5 or 6 months.
Okay. And so you have to do it all in the same year.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yep. Consecutively. So that's just kind of a cool challenge that they put out there. And a few runners, including Hunter, have taken that up. And
wow,
I would like to do it this next year in 2023, but I already have too much on my plate already. It's funny how quickly your calendar fills up.
Yeah. things that you want to do. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and I've seen the Mines of Spain. I know several people that are in my group, they have run the Mines of Spain, and I've heard about the Hitchcock, but I know that between the Hawk is a pretty challenging course. The Outlaw is outrageous. I mean, it's
Outlaws. Yeah.
Have you run that one?
I paced Jonathan out there this last year.
Okay. Okay.
Which collectively with the sections that, Ed and I paced, I got a full glimpse of the course. My thing is it's in February. Mm-hmm. And so the weather could be anything.
Yeah.
And I don't like the cold.
2 years ago, it was 6 below 0.
And yep. I remember seeing those pictures and said, no, thank you.
And snow. And yeah. I was supposed to pace Troy Pruitt, and he turned, it was, they had ice at the very beginning. Mm-hmm. He turned his ankle like in the first 2 miles and was just moving real slow. So by the time it came to, he was late, compared to what he thought it was going to be for me pacing him overnight. And he decided to sleep, and I was like, okay, I'm sure he's done because his ankle swelled up. And but I paced a lady year before that, in 2020. Abby, is her trail name. And, paced her through the night. And so I saw the course. I'm like, that's a tough course.
Yeah. I think just to talk about pacing a little bit, my friend Ed and I, we had a little friendly competition that it didn't start the year as a competition, but, he paced a lot of his friends and I paced a lot of my friends. Like, it started the year with pacing Jonathan and then just kind of pacing friends throughout the year. We were trying to see who could get more pacing miles, but
who won?
I think I had, he ended up did, cause he paced at the Hell Creek out there and I couldn't make it out there. And so he got ahead of me there and I didn't really have any good chances to catch back up. Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, I like just this year, I got my accomplishments, but I think one of the coolest things that like, there's a group of us in Topeka, shout out to the Buckleheads, that we've kind of doubled in size this last year.
Oh, and wow, that's
getting
good.
Getting a lot of our friends to commit to their first ultra marathons, like down at Flat Rock, there's Audrey, Dan, I think several others that ran their first ultra, and just, we all live here in Topeka. So, but I think the coolest thing was seeing just friends complete their first ultras this year, complete their first 100 milers this year, and just pacing friends and helping, crewing and helping. And that's kind of been what I've done more this year than I ever have. It's just, I think I volunteered somewhere earlier this year. I can't remember, but yeah, I need to volunteer more, but I volunteered a lot last year at a lot of races, but just seeing people being on the other side of things is almost as good as completing the race yourself.
Well, and as a runner, you know what they need when they come in. I mean, that's
exactly,
it's a big help to have been out there and know, kind of what they're going through and what they need.
Yeah.
Yeah, I volunteered this year for at the Hawk, Trailhawks. I agreed to take over the race director for the Snake in July.
That's right.
And yeah. So I volunteered before, you know, but never had, you know, it's different when you know you're going to be running a race. And it's like, okay, I need to see what's going on here behind the scenes.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot of cool events that are all being put on out at Clinton Lake, like the Cactus Roulette that's coming up. That looks fun.
I volunteered for the Cactus Roulette last year because, well, first off, I hate running Cactus Ridge. I mean, that's the worst part of that entire course is Cactus Ridge. And I looked at the race and I went, I could end up running Cactus Ridge like five times in a row because it's a roulette.
Depending on how you spun. Yeah.
Depending on how you spun. And for those who are listening, it was three loops of about 4 miles or so each. And it was a timed event and you spun a roulette wheel to know which of the loops that you ran. And one of them was Cactus Ridge, which is why it's called Cactus Roulette.
Yeah.
And, but then, you know, after it was over, I was kind of looking at it. I was like, oh, Cactus Ridge, maybe not be that bad. And so I started thinking about it again and, it's not going to work out for me this year to do that. So I'll probably volunteer again, but it is, it's worth putting up with Cactus Ridge to be part of the race. Cause it's just, Todd, you know, he did a great job directing and.
Yep. Yeah. My friend Sean, Frost, another bucklehead, he won the 12-hour one.
Like, oh, wow.
It was a really, I don't know if you saw it at the end, but I wasn't there, but he was saying that, like him and this other guy were kind of battling out till the very end. And I think he ended up winning with 50 something miles.
Wow.
I don't know about that much, but, it looks a lot of fun this year. It's on the same day as, the Yeti obstacle course run.
Okay.
I think Jenny's running that. It's just a little small obstacle course race down there in Bonner Springs, but.
Oh, wow. Okay. Is that a place? It's like a permanent place, right?
Yeah, it's a part of the Casey Zip Line.
Okay,
and they have a obstacle course race series that they hold several races throughout the year, and it's always challenging. It's fun. It's usually not very long in distance, but they always try to change up everything. It is a permanent obstacle course race, but they change everything up. They make something challenging or. They take away a foothold here to make, you know, that wall a little bit harder. So, but it's good that it's, you know, 45 minutes from me.
Yeah. And that keeps you kind of, there's a different mindset when you race versus just going out and training. And so,
it gives you
a little bit of a taste. Of that kind of strategy. So, well, tell me a little bit about your run. I mean, for the Tough Mudder. For people who may not have heard the first episode, the Tough Mudder is, you said it's 5 miles. What are the obstacles? What are some of the obstacles?
Yep. Like? Well, so it's the world's toughest mudder is the 24-hour, like a normal Tough Mudder race is typically, I think now they change their distances to Ks. So there's a 5K, 10K, 15K. 15K is kind of the standard one. Where you hit all the obstacles. That's what the distance has kind of always been. But the world's toughest mudder is kind of all of that combined into a 5 mile course. And this year it was in Atmore, Alabama. This is the third time I've ran it. And they always try to make things very unique. But some of the obstacles, you know, you have like a typical Everest wall, which is a warped wall. Just some of their trademark ones. They have Mudderhorn, which is a 5-story, 50-foot cargo net, basically cargo net T. I know listeners can't see my hands, but
so
you go up a giant cargo net 5 stories up, and then you go down 5 stories. But this year in particular, I don't know if you saw any pictures of this, but I would encourage listeners to go check it out. Actually, Obstacle Course Racing Media, shout out to them. They just released a 50-minute documentary on World's Toughest Mudder today.
Wow. Okay.
So that should be on YouTube. But the back, so imagine a giant tube slide, five stories up in the air, and you just go down and then you shoot down into a basically pit of water. But that was how they made Mudderhorn unique this year. And it was crazy. Like you rocket down this thing. And
so you climb up the cargo net, and
you climb up the cargo net, and typically you climb down, but this year they put a tube slide that they forced you to go down it, or you could take a penalty, which was playing croquet around this little thing. Like, yeah. But
so if you skip an obstacle, you take a penalty.
Mm-hmm. If they're not a must complete, then you can take a penalty.
Okay.
But some of the other ones, they're, you know, the Everest Wall, Arctic Enema, which you climb up a small platform, probably 10 feet up, and then you slide down into a giant pit of water that has a trailer full of ice right next to it that they're constantly dumping ice into.
Wow.
There was a lot of, they had Funky Monkey, which was an inclined monkey bars. And then usually there's a ring that you go around, but just kind of inclined monkey bars. And then you go down a set of monkey bars, just a lot of upper body stuff. But this year they added a tire and a banana hold to it. And a lot of runners couldn't do it. But I ended up taking a penalty on that, which the penalty for that one was you had to hop on a hoppy ball, like one of those medicine balls with the mm-hmm. handle.
Mm-hmm.
You had to hop on that for, I think, 50 yards. That was the penalty.
Wow.
And it was like they add a lot of these silly penalties to the obstacles you can't complete just to really kind of mess with you. Sometimes it's their own amusement. Sometimes it's, you know, it just adds fun to it, because there's a lot of people that run these races. They are not going to win, or they usually will have a goal and then they'll just try and stick with that goal. And sometimes that doesn't, like, it's all World's Toughest Mudder is as much as you put into it as you want it to. But yeah, some of the other obstacles there's a lot of grip strengthy ones. There's a cargo net platform, or you climb up, you grab onto a cargo net, and you have to traverse all the way across lots of tight tubes. You know, I think collectively there's 25 obstacles, and you have to go through them all for one loop, and then you get to do it again and again.
You keep doing it again and again. Yeah.
And yeah. So I got that 75-mile silver bib. So I completed 15 loops, and I think overall there was probably 40 runners that got 75 miles. The overall winner got 105.
Oh my goodness.
Miles. Yeah, he got 105. They had their first female that got 100. Jenny, she was there too.
Mm-hmm.
I ran Toughest Mudder with her too, which was the overnight one in Indiana, but she got, unofficially, she got 90 miles. Officially, she got 85 miles, which was, it was third place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I knew she got third place. I saw the picture.
Yeah, she was a beast. And
so what's the unofficial, you say officially is 85?
There was some, she could probably explain it much better, but there was some chip time controversy with, like, I think when she said it, she forgot her timing chip, because you have a timing chip that mm-hmm. will, you know, cross throughout the race, but the rule is you have to leave the pit with it. And I think she was switching bibs out, because they put on a leader bib when you are one of the leaders. And I think she forgot to put her timing chip back on, and they made her complete the loop and it didn't count.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And yeah, so it caused some drama, but still, like, what she did was incredible. And that was her first time at that race. And yeah, it was incredible. I had an honor seeing that and being a part of that. So
yeah, that's cool. So how did you? You're running ultra marathons, mm-hmm. and then you're also doing this. So what's the training like? Because I know, you know, a lot of runners typically
mm-hmm.
Don't work on upper body.
Yeah,
it's like. So what's your training look like for that?
The first half of the year was all, it was a lot of running. Just because I had Silver Hills on my mind, I knew that I had to be strong in the mountains, strong legs. But a lot of it's just, I use a lot of kettlebell workouts, just a lot of circuit training, just because I'm not putting in those types of miles. I still want the heart rate to be up. So a lot of intervals, a lot of, you know, a lot of just kettlebell presses. Typically I use a 35 pound kettlebell, but just a lot of circuit training is what I like to stick to. But as like, I average probably, I think for most of the year, I probably put in maybe 40 to 50 mile weeks during kind of that peak training, which isn't a lot, but I was in the gym every day. And just kind of with my lifestyle, I don't have the time to put in those types of, like, 100 mile week is long gone for me. Like, I call my training program that I use, quotation marks program, the dad life training program, because I work.
I like that.
Yeah. Which, I mean, I should see if that's trademarked or not. But like, I hashtag dad life throughout it all, because with two young kids and, you know, working full time, and then my wife works in the evenings. Like, I've, like, once I come home, it's kind of high bye to my wife and she goes to work and it's just me and the boys. And so now Jacoby, our youngest, he's almost as a of age that the springtime, like kind of what I did with our older one, just let him play in the garage or outside out front while I work out in the garage and do that, like do sprints up and down the driveway. But yeah, I really just kind of get in what I can get in. Like that might be, if I have 30 minutes, I might go try and sneak in 3 miles. But if I have, you know, an hour, I might go get 5 or go, you know, do an hour workout. It really just, I just take what the day gives me, and it's resulted in, you know, reaching my goals and, you know, completing things. So there's not a whole lot of method to it. I just take what the day gives me, but really just focus on just, I mean, I'm not deadlifting 500 pounds. Like, right. I'm not benching, you know, 400 pounds. It's just lots of reps, lots of high reps is what I stick to as well. But yeah, just.
Yeah, from what I understand of weight training, you know, for runners, weight training, you need more reps and not, you know, you're not powerlifting.
Yep. I'm not looking to, you know, build a lot of muscle. I just want that muscle endurance. And so my reps are generally higher than what most would consider, you know, productive as far as gaining muscle, but that's not what I'm looking for, especially in these winter months. I'm not running hardly at all. I'm just in the gym with, you know, just getting high rep workouts in and yeah, going with that. I'm fortunate that I have the gym I go to is half a mile from our new house.
Oh, okay.
And so it's very convenient to just kind of either run or bike, or if I'm really lazy, drive over there. And
most people drive to the gym, I think.
Yeah. And get a good workout in. But I do have, so last year I talked Jonathan into doing a normal Tough Mudder with me and he loved it. But this year I have, I think, 5 other friends that are typically only runners doing a Tough Mudder with me in Missouri.
Wow.
So shout out to them. But my reasoning, like trying to get them to sign up, they're now focusing on strength training through the winter months, which I think is going to result in them being stronger runners in their races next year, because I think just building a little bit of muscle will do a lot of good for them.
Yeah. That's one of the things. I mean, most of us, I mean, who just take up running, don't have a lot of back. I mean, I didn't have a background in it. It was like, well, yeah, you just lace up your shoes and go out and, you know, put in a few miles.
Yeah.
And, you know, do that and build up your endurance. And that was kind of my approach. And, but then, you know, you find out your upper body has a lot to do with your, you know, ability to have endurance.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if I have a pack on all day, like you have your pack on, and you have all your water bottles, all your food, all your stuff, your shoulders are pretty sore at the end of that.
Yeah.
And if you just work on some shoulder workouts at like once a week, twice a week or whatever. It could help with that too. I mean, I don't have any sort of certificates or anything. I'm just talking on what's worked for me, and it's getting in to like almost prioritizing strength training, especially in the winter months before you crank up miles, I think will result in just, I think longevity in ultra running, because if someone just only runs all the time, you know, I don't know, who's to say that their body won't start breaking down at some point because there's no muscle that, I don't know.
Yeah. I think if they run, I mean, I know several people who are streakers, and so they're mm-hmm. running, you know, at least 2 miles a day every day. And it works for them. And I know mm-hmm. I talked to a guy who's did it for 36 years. So, I mean, mm-hmm. you can run every day.
Yeah.
But he's also was doing, you know, upper body work. He was not just running. Mm-hmm. He, you know, did other things too. He was a movement coach, I think.
I always try to focus, regardless, 10,000 steps a day is like, even if you're not running, you're still moving. Mm-hmm. And I guess with my job, it's pretty easy to do, but I think most programs that anyone will subscribe to, if you're not focusing on building muscle, 10,000 steps a day is a good benchmark just for in general, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And that's, and my wife counts her steps. So oftentimes she'll look at her watch, go be at the end of the day. It's like, oh, I didn't get enough steps in today. And so,
mm-hmm. I mean, whatever, you know, you got, whatever you have to use to stay accountable to yourself is what works. I mean, everybody's different.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's, you know, I backed off this last year. I didn't run any races at all. And, you know, backed off on my mileage as well. I kind of looked at, you know, I was busy. I was doing other things. I had, you know, didn't beat myself up about it, but, you know, I got to get to here the first of the year, and I'm looking ahead going like, okay, I've had a year of, you know, rest. I mean, like I'm still, you know, I go out and knock out a few miles on the trail. It wasn't it wasn't that hard, but it is like not in race shape. And so it was like, I'm like this year, you know, I'm setting a mileage goal. Going to set some goal races. And
do you want to say those goal races?
Well, I haven't chosen them yet.
Okay.
Well, I take it back. I did choose one. I'm going to do the Hawk 50.
Nice.
And I've since I started running, my first year of running, it wasn't fast, but I've slowed down some in the last couple of years. Don't know why. If I can get the speed back, I may go back and try to get the 100 at the Hawk. But, you talk about the cutoffs, you know, 30-hour cutoff for me is even when I was at my fastest, because I got a late start. I mean, I didn't start till I was 60 years old. So I just never really did run that fast, but 30-hour cutoff is something. Oh, this, maybe I should say, you know, that's going to be my goal.
Yeah.
But by middle of next year, to be able to run 100 mile with a 30-hour cutoff.
That's awesome.
But,
I think I have a couple big key races, if you want to call them A races. I don't really like saying that, but big efforts. I am running Bighorn, Bighorn 100.
That was good. Have you seen the course?
Yeah. I've watched almost every YouTube video there is on it. Uh-huh. And it's one of those, like, it's not a lottery race yet. So that's why it's also appealing. And it just looks really hard. I think there's 30,000 feet of gain or something like that.
Yeah.
And it gets really hot, but I actually do very well in the heat. Like, I think it was in 2021. Was that the really hot Hawk year?
Is that 2021 was the hot Hawk year. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You did. Yeah. You did well in that.
Mm-hmm. I finished that. Like, I think there were only 11 finished that whole thing.
50, somewhere, you know, close to 50 people started and only 11 finished.
Mm-hmm.
It was brutal.
But yeah. Yeah. We are doing Bighorn. I do want to get down. I want to try the Flat Rock 100 miler.
Yes.
I don't know if you saw that at all, but last year was the first year that Outlaw put on Flat Rock, and yes, one runner finished it, and that was Chase Hammond. He was the only runner that finished. I was like,
I'd forgotten that. Yeah, I followed that race and saw he was the only finisher. I was like, wow, that's
insane. There weren't a whole lot of runners that started, but just one runner that finished is like, I really want to try it now. Yeah.
Well, yeah, we talked about that earlier. That's a tough course. I mean, it is like that.
It's very tough. And it was funny. I had two runners that they primarily do tough mutters, or like they live in Kansas City. They never actually run a trail race, and they signed up for the 100K down there. John, he's from Oregon. And then Michael, he's older. I can't remember how old he is, but they attempted the 100K, and I talked them into it because I was like, they were also doing World's Toughest Mudder. I told them it'd be great training, and I caught them on a loop, and they were sarcastically, at least I hope to think they were sarcastic, like mad at me because I did not tell them how difficult that course was going to be. And John is from Oregon. He's like, I did not know this existed in Kansas. And it's, I don't know if you've ever been down there, or yeah, you've done Winter Rock, but
yeah,
most people don't think of that when they think of Kansas.
No, those formations are unique.
Yeah, they are
for Kansas. But, I mean,
yeah, I did the 100K in last year out there. And okay, I think the 100 miler, I think will be, I do want to get back down to World's Toughest Mudder. It's in Dallas this year, and to see if I can improve on 75 miles. And just this particular year, a lot of the elites didn't run, and so the field was almost wide open.
Oh, wow.
And this next year, a lot of the elites are running when it's in Dallas. And I don't know, I would just kind of like to see how I stack up against them. And then Jenny's running it again, and just other friends that are going to be down there that I see once a year, every year at World's Toughest Mudder, but they're like best friends.
Yeah. That's cool. Yeah. You go.
That's the same thing with ultras too. Like a lot of these ultras, especially people that live in other parts of the country, you know, other parts of the state, you only see them at these races, but it's like, you know, you see them every day.
Yeah. Yeah. That's good. I ran across, I got to hang out with Chase Hammond and his wife at the Hawk this year. And
dude, they're so awesome.
Yeah. They just decided to go mobile, totally immobile with their life. And so they're,
I've loved seeing their journey. I can't make it work this year, but, the race that they're putting on, the KD 225, you see that?
I didn't. This is different than the Cowboy 200.
It is. Okay. They moved the date to the Cowboy to early September. Man, like, I think a lot of that has to do with how cold it got in northern Nebraska, because the Cowboy was in, I think, November. But the KD 225, they're using the KD Trail in Missouri.
Oh, wow.
To put on a point-to-point 225-mile race. Is insane. Like I don't think you can get that anywhere in the country. And a lot of it is rails to trails, but I don't think it's typical rails to trails. I think there's a lot of kind of rolling hills that are throughout there. And
yeah, it is. It's a 3% grade. It is the most.
Yeah.
So, I bicycled on the Katy Trail a long, long time ago. my wife, I was like, it was one of those things that my wife and I and our daughter says, oh yeah, we've heard about the Katy Trail. Let's go, you know, do a biking holiday. And so we spent like the day riding, and, you know, my wife kept, you know, she said at the end of the day, I wish I had a hill. I'd walk up the hill so I could coast down, because, I mean, we weren't in shape. We weren't used to riding a bicycle. And so, you know, pedaling the entire time, it was just like, oh God, this is not the kind of bicycle riding we were used to. I could probably do it now, I didn't Chase notice that the grade is, you know, 3% grade goes for miles. So,
yeah, Yeah, there's I think the first race I'm running of his is I'm doing Eternal Damnation again.
Okay.
Which is their last man standing race.
So you did that again? Did you do that this year?
Yeah, I did that. That was the first race this year, and I think I got fourth okay, place on that, but which was, I think it was 58 miles, but it was the first time ever doing that type of a format with, you know, the 4.2 miles every hour, and it's like, doesn't matter if you finish it in 30 minutes, 40 minutes, you start it at the top of the hour and you just go until you can't. And yeah, I think I got 58 miles, which was, I think, fourth place.
So 58 miles and you started every, so you ran for 58 hours.
No.
No, 58. No, take that back. No,
I think it was 14 yards.
14 yards.
Yeah. So yeah. They call it yards to mirror the Laz one.
Right.
For some reason, my
brain just,
I was like, damn, wait a minute. Okay. 1 mile an hour.
1 mile an hour. That
would be a mind game.
That would be a mind game. Well, have you heard of the Tennessee Mile?
The Tennessee Mile.
Okay. Becca Jones puts that on, and it's her parents' house, and it's a 1 mile course. You do it every 20 minutes.
Oh wow!
And it's there's a hill in it that's a 20% grade. It's not very long.
Wow.
But it's you use your hands to get up, and then also 20% grade down. So.
Wow.
And
is this a race that she puts on, or is it,
she
kind
puts
of,
it, yeah, she's a race director. Fun? Yeah. She's a race director. And so,
wow,
they did it during COVID. I mean, I think she's been on once or twice in the podcast. So, they had an exemption for weddings. So they had some friends get married the day of the race. So everybody could come to the wedding.
That's awesome.
And the reception, and they did this last man standing race. And so it's only 1 mile, but it's every 20 minutes. And so,
wow. I think that's so cool. Like, just as ultra running kind of gets more and more popular, more of these, cause that seems unique. But like a lot of these races, even around here with these last man standing races, the Cactus Roulette, you know, HPRS, they put on a race where you draw a ping pong ball, and that ping pong color is the loop that you run. And
okay.
You just run whatever hour timed event that you wanted, whether it's 30, 15, whatever he does. But just all these kind of unique style races that I think are fun. Yeah. And yeah.
Yeah. And then the nice thing is, for those of you who are volunteering, you get to hang out.
Yeah.
it's a party. Well, the thing I noticed about, a loop race, I've only done a couple of timed events, and, getting sucked into the, seeing the aid station every time you come around, that can play mind games with you. And so, you end up hanging around too long.
Yeah. The thing about the last man standing one that is so interesting is that, the fastest 100 miles. So the Ozark took me 29 hours. The Hawk took me 29 hours. And those are my fastest 100 milers. And so, but if I run 100 miles at a last man standing race, that would be a 24 hour 100 miler.
Yeah.
And so just the idea of like pacing yourself for that long, like just because 4 miles in an hour isn't like a super fast pace.
No,
it's and not. Yeah, it just, it really makes you think in a normal 100 miler, like, because I always have the bad habit of going out too fast and then the wheels fall off. But if I just keep it nice and steady and stay disciplined, you know, it could result in a better outcome. But I don't know.
Yeah, that's
also nice. I also think it's fun to just take off like a rocket and see what happens. Just see what happens.
Yeah, there's and then what happens is other people will follow you, and they'll curse you later. Like
we're going into deep waters and you're not going to want to come.
Yeah. That's great. Yeah. Devin, thank you a lot for coming back and spending time and talking about your races, and hope things go well for you. I'm looking forward to following and seeing your success in the coming year.
Yeah. Eric, I appreciate it. And I like the podcast that you do. I think you just reposted another one with Sally McRae, just moments that you had with her in that podcast. But I just like the guests that you have on are not like, there are the named ones. You have the Andy McDonalds, you have the, you know, Sally McRae's and all those elite runners, but you also interview, you know, a normal dad like me and, or just, you know, whether it's Jenny or other friends and Jonathan, I don't know. I appreciate everything you do.
Well, and I appreciate you listening. Yeah, I appreciate you being a listener. Yeah,
I love your Monday mindsets are always good.
Well, thank you. Thank you.
And just the mindset podcasts that are the short little chunks are always good. So I appreciate everything you do, Eric.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. Appreciate that feedback. Yeah. So when I started, it was like, you know, I was talking and, you know, I had like 20 listeners a week and, you know, just, I had to keep going. It was one of those things is like, yeah, I'm doing it. Yeah. So my motivation is, yes, I want to share good stories. That's really the thing that I've looked for is to try to share stories that are interesting and, you know, what kind of discussions we have on the trail. And so, well, thank you a lot. Tell how people can get a hold of you. If they wanted to follow along on your
cool. I have a Instagram, I think it's Devin Nelson 619, but if I literally post everything as hashtag dad life, hashtag keep hammering.
Okay.
It's just kind of my joke, but yeah, I live here in Topeka. You know, we're spoiled with good trail systems here. It's funny. I know this will air afterwards, but at 7 o'clock tonight, Jonathan and I, and a couple others are going to go out to the Governor Trails and we're going to go run a 50K. Into the new year.
Okay. Yeah.
So
yeah. Well, there's,
that's like we're going to start at 7.
Yeah. That's going on in Arizona across the years. I know.
Is there one there too?
Yeah. It's been going on for a long time. It's like a 72 hour thing. I mean, you can run it's I think a looped course, but
we just thought this would be fun.
Yeah. There's others as well, but yeah, that's a good thing to do. 50K. So.
Yep. Yeah. We just decided.
Will you be
let's run an ultra?
Will you be able to run on the trails out there?
Shh.
Okay. you turn off your Strava, right?
Yeah. There's not going to be a beacon, so we're gonna.
Yeah.
I think the park hours are technically they end at 11.
Okay.
But it's like, guys, we're not up to no good. We're just out here, kind of just running around. Just leave us alone.
Well, Todd ran a Shaustis loop. Have you run the Wyandotte County Trail? You know the Shaustis loop.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He ran 100. He ran 100K on the Shaustis loop one summer, and it was after, you know, the park was closed. You know, he did it. You know, and they actually have gates; they lock. And so he said he was off in the woods running, and you know, the sheriff car was kind of beeping their siren. You know, thinking that, you know, there was this car sitting in the parking lot, and then the sheriff went on and left him alone. But he ran overnight.
Yeah, we're hoping that, you know, we're going to park down the street and like it's New Year's Eve. They have more things to worry about.
They've got more things to do than to worry about you guys.
So. Yeah, we're just running around in the woods.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, the only thing is their leaves are off the trees, and so somebody might see your lights. But I hopefully it'll be fun. But yeah, it's too bad that some of the parks don't make arrangements to be able to stay open. I know that Wyandotte County Park won't do anything for overnight races because those would be, especially, you know, summertime would be fun.
Yeah, they would be.
Yeah, I enjoy the overnight the Nighthawk. I mean, it's miserable because it's hot and humid, but, I always enjoy, you know, starting a race at 8 o'clock at night and running until 6 in the morning.
Yeah, it is interesting. Like one of the Tough Mudder races that they put on Toughest Mudder, which is the over. It starts at 8 p.m. and it goes till 8 a.m.
Okay,
yeah. And you essentially, you know, run for 12 hours overnight. But that's the only race I've never ran the Nighthawk, but that's the only race I've ran where you start at 8 p.m. And today kind of feels like that. Like I'm kind of just waiting around,
Yeah, you're gonna wait till you start at 7 and run.
Yeah. Run like I'm ready to run now.
Yeah, that's cool. That's cool. Yeah. Well, have a great run today, and thank you again for coming on here.
Thanks, Eric. I appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Ultra Marathon Mindset Podcast. I do enjoy being able to spend time with you here each week. I appreciate you taking the time to listen. The show notes for this episode and others are at ultramindsetpodcast.run. You can find this week's guest there. More information, links to their social media and website. There's also a podcast player there if you want to share this episode with somebody who does not normally listen to podcasts and doesn't have a podcast player on their phone. You can also find links there for my Amazon affiliate link, Crush Your Goals course, a short course I made to help you get your goals in order. Also, you can schedule a chat with me. I have my online calendar is there. All of these links are at the sidebar if you're on a laptop, or you have to scroll clear to the bottom if you are on a phone. If you did enjoy this episode and you do know somebody who might like it, take just a minute, send them a link so they can listen. Remember that an ultramarathon mindset is about more than just running. You need a strong mindset for success no matter what your goal in life. And developing a strong mindset is a skill you can improve. Thank you again for listening. I'll see you next time.